Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
While the Florida House tries to reshuffle the deck of the already negotiated Seminole gaming deal, the Senate is tapping the brakes.
Neither of those issues will come before the committee today. They will be temporarily postponed, and we'll see whether they show back up on the agenda on Thursday or not.
Also tonight, Florida lawmakers are putting together the finishing touches on the criminal justice budget.
But we have to be realistic. We're a very large part of the criminal justice budget, and it's not fair to the other agencies when I have an unexpected expense to take away from the others.
We'll also hear about possible changes to the Florida alimony laws, efforts to reduce the number of mentally ill people behind bars, and visit a presidential campaign rally. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day two of the eighth week in the 2016 Florida lawmaking session. Welcome to Capitol Report. With time running out, lawmakers in the House are proposing gaming changes some say could send negotiations with the Seminole tribe back to the start. Regan McCarthy has more.
Florida House member Jose Felix Diaz represented his chamber during compact negotiations with the Seminole Indian tribe. His committee, Regulated Industries, workshopped and passed the chamber's initial gaming legislation. But since then, Diaz says the measure has changed. He spoke about a proposed committee substitute Monday during a Tax and Finance Committee meeting. Diaz says the new measure makes several changes, including
a change to the compact which will clarify how and where an existing Seminole facility can be relocated to another location on the same reservation. A change to the definition of live table games, which will clarify which wheel games will be played at Seminole Tribe facilities. Inclusion of fantasy sports provision, which will require clarity in the Seminole Compact itself.
Diaz says the measure also provides additional slot machine licenses, which could go to communities like Gretna in Gadsden County, where there's already a paramutual and citizens have held a referendum vote supporting the addition of slots. But Diaz says many of the changes included in the bill will require a renegotiation of the gaming agreement between the state and the Seminole tribe.
After months of having negotiated the compact, I know that some of these will be easy fixes, while others will be much, much more difficult to accommodate.
And Shalimar Republican Representative Matt Gates, who helped author the changes, agrees with Diaz that many of the issues will require tribe approval. But he says he sees a simple solution for that.
If these provisions are adopted and ultimately signed by Governor Scott, the tribe will have the authority to agree or not agree. And it will be by the Seminole tribe's hand, not by this legislature's hand, and certainly not by this committee's hand, and certainly not by Chair Diaz's hand, that this deal does not get done. So we are merely putting the tools out for the tribe and paramutuals to work together to achieve consensus by contract.
Gates admits the measure includes significant changes, but he says those modifications are important steps to get the House gaming bill closer to the Senate's version.
And so in many ways, this is our love note to the Senate, our plea, our hope that all of the work that Chair Diaz has done, that all of the work that our tribal partners have done, that the work of the members of this committee will not go for naught, but that we are saying in good faith, to our partners in the Florida Senate, to Chairman Lee, to the members of the Senate Appropriations Committee, that we are open to working with you in a bipartisan, bicameral way to actually do something and not just be a figure of dysfunction and discord.
Meanwhile, in the Senate, the Appropriations Committee had been expected to take up that chamber's gaming legislation Tuesday, but Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee announced at the beginning of the meeting plans had changed.
We will not be taking up either bill relating to gaming today. Neither of those issues will come before the committee today. They will be temporarily postponed, and we'll see whether they show back up on the agenda on Thursday or not.
Lee's committee is the final committee standing between the Senate's gaming legislation and the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Florida lawmakers are close to deciding on the state's criminal justice budget. As Sasha Cordner reports, a large portion deals with the state's prison agency.
Most of the criminal and civil justice budget has been decided on. That's according to Stewart Republican Senator Joe Negron, the vice chair of the Criminal Budget Conference.
If you look at the big picture of our entire budget area, less than 1% of the funding issues are unresolved. So the fact that we've come to an agreement on literally 99% of the funding issues and then only a handful of policy issues, I think, speaks well for all of us working together to find common ground.
And Republican Representative Larry Metz, the Criminal Budget Conference Chair, echoed those thoughts during Monday's meeting.
We did land the plane pretty early in the process, relatively speaking, and with almost everything agreed upon, just a few things that we kind of knew almost from the beginning that we wouldn't be able to resolve. And so it went very smoothly, and I just want to thank you. And
thank you.
Negron says among the unresolved issues are $1 million for a technology audit for the Florida Department of Corrections, a request by Baker Republican Greg Evers, the Senate Criminal Justice Chairman.
Senator Evers, who's the policy chair in this area, wants to make sure that if we purchase new technology, that the technology is something where it can communicate with other agencies, where it's easy for the legislature and others that oversee the department to be able to get access to the technology, and that it isn't in a bunch of different silos. So that's an issue that's been important to him.
Another area of disagreement is funding for a $1 million grant program for police body cameras.
A number of senators believe that the use of body cameras with officers in the field and also with our corrections officers in prison will protect officers from allegations that are not substantiated and will also, you know, provide the public and law enforcement with a more accurate rendition of what occurred.
Both the House and Senate did agree on about $145,000 for a similar effort at Sumter Correctional Institution, says Florida Department of Corrections Secretary Julie Jones.
It's money for a pilot to start to use body cameras to monitor inmate and officer activity at Sumter. And Sumter's a camp that's very highly regulated for youthful offenders and juveniles.
Jones had also initially asked for 472 staffing positions. She'd later upped her request to 734. She says that would help address understaffing and help in her effort to reduce corrections officer shifts from 12 to 8 hours. Although sympathetic to that request, Metz says the budget chair simply couldn't make the numbers work.
We can't necessarily do it all in one fell swoop. But I do, from a policy perspective, not budget, support Secretary Jones' effort to go to an 8-hour shift.
And Jones says she understands that, which is why she'll be back again next year with a similar staffing request.
The reason that I asked to go back to 8 hours was to, we've used a staffing study that's going to be completed the end of May, which is going to be the gold standard for implementing relief factor, which I had originally asked for in this cycle. I think it's going to get us close to level one staffing, but the relief factor goes to those level two and three, but it's going to give me a much better number to go forward with next year.
The Florida Department of Corrections just signed a new prison health two-year contract with Centurion Florida totaling $268 million. The prison agency had to sign a new contract after the private prison health care provider for most of the state, Corizon Health, abruptly left. Jones says she's hopeful the money she needs to fund other services won't be eaten up by this unexpected expense. Meanwhile, the Florida House is now poised to vote on a bill to put guidelines in place for the state's crime labs to follow when processing rape kits. Negron and Metz agreed on $2.3 million to help take care of the thousands of untested rape kits. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, with time running short, medical marijuana supporters are making a final bid for new legislation before lawmakers head home.
If we get caught flat-footed, we will be the next California. We will be the next Colorado.
Are proposed changes to Florida divorce laws a move towards fairness, or do they unfairly penalize women?
This is not what children need. Children need stability. And stability is nowhere to be found in this 50-50 arrangement.
And on this Super Tuesday, we head north to neighboring Georgia to hear what the GOP frontrunner had to say to a crowd of more than 7,000.
We can't let the Syrians come in. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they come from.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
Medical cannabis legislation is heading to the Senate floor for the second time after a clash in committee, but Nick Evans reports time's running out for the proposal to gain passage in both chambers before the end of session.
Whether medical cannabis legislation passes or fails this session, the pivot point for that debate came in the middle of February in the House Health and Human Services Committee.
The rules of the House permit a committee to substitute one piece of legislation for two pieces of legislation on a similar subject.
That's Republican Representative Matt Gaetz of Shalimar. He and Jason Broder of Sanford combined separate measures to get the legislation onto the House floor. But the move also raised the ire of opponents like Stewart Republican Gail Harrell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I have to say, this combination of two bills puts me between a rock and a hard place.
When Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley attempted to bring the Senate companion measure in line, other senators immediately tacked on almost 40 amendments. Leadership then referred the proposal back to the Senate Rules Committee. By the time senators were unspooling the measure, the amendment count had grown to 60.
All right, so now we're going to vote on or before 4:55 p.m. today, so that gives us a flexibility if we have some succinct, laconic, concise presenters and debaters. We'll be done well before that.
That's Altamonte Springs Republican Senator David Simmons. Bradley says the Senate needs to move now to complete the work it began with the Compassionate Use Act of 2014.
Senators, 2 years ago we made a promise to families that we all met, that we all, some of us got to know them very well. And here we are 2 years later, and we have not made good on that promise.
Bradley's original bill gives terminal patients access to cannabis. The new language also makes changes to the existing medical marijuana framework, most notably providing a pathway for new growers. But with a medical marijuana constitutional amendment coming up on the November ballot, Clearwater Republican Jack Latvala questions the urgency.
Why is it so important? Why the push to have this bill to with the point of where we're limiting debate and stuff to get this done right now, and then the voters may adopt something that's even more expansive. Or a different regime. Why is it so important to do this now?
Bradley worries without a framework in place, lawmakers could lose control of the cannabis industry.
If we get caught flat-footed, we will be the next California. We will be the next Colorado. What we're doing now is we are setting the regulatory system. We are defining the rules.
Former Senate President Don Gaetz frames his response in more high-minded terms, saying for him, voting yes is a moral imperative.
Let me see if I can answer Senator Latvala's question, at least as I answer it for myself, and perhaps I can persuade others. It's important now because 2 years ago in Pensacola, I held a child in my arms who was suffering 4 to 5 violent epileptic seizures a day, a child who at that rate, because of the damage done by those seizures, would be dead before he'd be able to graduate from high school.
But Latvala fired back.
You know, we've got somebody who got left out, so we're now, this bill takes care of them, and we got 8 more people who think they're left out, and maybe this bill's going to take care of them. This is about, you know, making money as much or more as it's about helping sick people. And that's my moral imperative to vote no.
Both lawmakers have a point. Initial missteps from the Department of Health and the financial stakes of an industry limited to only a handful of licensees made the 2014 measures rollout adversarial, to say the least. And while patients have waited, the legal challenges only seem to multiply. The new proposal attempts to put those fights to bed, but with the close of session looming and a floor vote in both chambers ahead, the sponsors have little room for error. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Divorce and the resulting fallout from the breakup of a family generates a lot of conversation in the Florida legislature, and for the past several years, issues like alimony, child support, and custody have brought droves of people to the state capitol. Now, as Lynn Hatter reports, a massive family law proposal is heading to the Senate floor, and it sparked a lot of debate among women.
Florida's debate over alimony has often skewed heavily toward men, who tend to be on the paying end of the scale. But increasingly, women are speaking up, too. Natalie Sohn has been talking in favor of the bill. She pays alimony, and she says as more women get into higher-paying fields, more will end up paying, too.
It wasn't fair. I won't be able to retire. I have a very high amount because they based it on my best year ever. Medicine's changed. I'm an OBGYN. I work very, very hard. I work about 50 to 60 hours a week. I'm turning 50 this year. Can I do this when I'm 60, 65, 70? I can't.
Most alimony payers are still men, and the recipients are still women. Some have not worked for years in order to be stay-at-home moms, and that's not an easy job.
Women who devote their entire lives to their husbands and their children are going to be left destitute when they turn 65 or whatever age it is at which their alimony ends under this system.
That's retired Circuit Judge Bob Doyle. The Florida Senate has added a controversial 50-50 custody split bill to an already contentious alimony reform measure that eliminates permanent spousal support. Doyle says the bill will generate more lawsuits, and he argues splitting time 50-50 is destabilizing.
Does it mean spending a week at a time with each, a month at a time, 6 months at a time? What does it really mean? This is not what children need. Children need stability, and stability is nowhere to be found in this 50-50 arrangement.
The alimony bill sets out a formula for awarding alimony based on gross income and length of a marriage. Republican Representative Tom Lee's custody-sharing amendment outlines a 50-50 split, if possible. It's not the first time the legislature has tried to pass such proposals. Lee's custody split arrangement plan failed last year, and a few years ago, Governor Rick Scott vetoed an alimony reform bill that was retroactive. That's not in this proposal. Alan Frischer, president of the advocacy group Family Law Reform, has pushed for the changes, and he helped craft the measure.
Ask a divorced individual how he or she felt when treated like a common criminal in today's court simply for marrying the wrong person. Ask a permanent alimony payer how he or she feels to be financially tied forever to the one person that they want to get away from and can move on with their lives.
But Barbara Devane with the Florida chapter of the National Organization for Women says she's gearing up to fight it if the bill passes.
I am very much for women being independent, but I'm also very much for women having a choice. Any woman getting married these days, if this bill passes and the governor signs it and it becomes law, well, they better think twice before they decide to stay home and take care of children. And their husband decides to trade them in for a younger model. Where are they going to be?
The debate is now heading to the floors of the House and Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Under Florida law, people must be mentally competent before they stand trial. Now, some state lawmakers are working on reforms for defendants who are incompetent. While a similar proposal was vetoed by Governor Rick Scott in 2013, Kate Payne reports this year the measure could get another chance.
Some 2 million people with mental illness are booked into America's jails every year. That's according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And as more mentally ill people are swept into the criminal justice system, more are deemed incompetent and unfit to stand trial. Though a similar bill was vetoed in 2013, some state lawmakers are going back to the drawing board on how these cases are handled.
It's a start, and we believe it's an appropriate change. And the state attorneys have signed off on it.
That's Representative Kathleen Peters of St. Pete, the bill's sponsor. The main facet of Peters' bill could smooth the transition from jail into therapy. When they aren't able to stand trial, defendants enroll in a counseling program with the hopes of restoring competency. These programs typically include therapy, medication, and case management, and may be conducted in a forensic mental hospital or a community or civil setting. Peter's bill would keep people on the same medications when they make this transition. John Bryant is an assistant secretary for mental health at the Department of Children and Families.
They arrive with medication from the jail, yet once they arrive at our facility, refuse to take that medication.
If recovery is successful and the defendant is able to stand trial, a new hearing is scheduled for the case. But Bryant says this process isn't always timely, and defendants may have to wait it out in a mental hospital.
Although 85% of the courts basically have scheduled a hearing and have that court hearing scheduled within 30 days, there's about 15% of the individuals that we have residing within our facilities who have not had that hearing scheduled. We believe that it's important to ensure that those individuals who do, have the same rights as everybody else.
Peter's bill would ensure a hearing is held within 30 days of a defendant being deemed competent. Some may not recover from their illnesses and may never be able to stand trial. Currently, if a defendant is deemed incompetent for 5 consecutive years, they can be cleared of charges and released. But Peter says mental health professionals call this process ineffective and inefficient.
If they didn't get an inmate competent, within 2 years they were not going to get them competent. Now, for nonviolent offenders, to leave them in a forensic facility that's extremely expensive and there's confidence that they cannot get them competent, why would we leave them there for 5 years when it's been a nonviolent nature offense to begin with?
This is the most controversial aspect of the bill. In 2013, the House and Senate passed a similar bill unanimously. But when it reached the governor's desk, he vetoed it because he thought the conditions for release were too broad. But under Peter's bill, only those charged with certain nonviolent crimes would be eligible for early release.
The state attorneys objected because we didn't put enough exclusions, and they felt that the aggravated battery and some other things should be included. And so we have worked with the state attorney. This really does not allow us to let a lot of people out of the forensic facility early because of the changes that we've added in.
Peters is confident the measure will get the support it needs. The bill awaits a floor vote in the House and Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump's star power was on full display at tiny Valdosta State University on the eve of the Super Tuesday election in neighboring Georgia. A standing-room-only crowd flooded the school's 7,000-seat gym. Some supporters traveled more than 100 miles to hear the brash Manhattan real estate mogul repeat his promise to build a wall along the Mexican border and make America great again. Jim Ash was there.
It was pure, unadulterated Trump. The Donald launched his off-the-cuff remarks, trumpeting his poll numbers and trashing his top two rivals, U.S. Senators Marco Rubio of Florida and Ted Cruz of Texas.
Trump, 49%. Little lightweight Marco Rubio, 16%. Lion Ted Cruz, 15%.
Trump spoke for more than 40 minutes without notes in a stream-of-conscious style that bounced from Medicaid prescription prices and Obamacare to putting Christmas references back on department store shelves. Trump not only repeated his promise to wall off the southern U.S. border and make Mexico pay for it, he chided Mexican President Vicente Fox for dropping an F-bomb in a recent interview, and he referred to the foreign leader as, quote, that guy. It's a subject near to the heart of Presley Boatwright. The 18-year-old drove 90 minutes from Alma because she hopes Trump will, quote, make America great again, and because she's worried about unchecked immigration.
All these immigrants, everything's bad.
According to media reports, a group of black students complained that they were ejected from the gymnasium before Trump gave his remarks. The Trump campaign denied giving the order, according to the same reports. Trump was endorsed at the rally by NASCAR chairman Bill France and Hall of Fame driver Bill Elliott. Elliott's son Chase and drivers Ryan Newman and David Reagan also joined Trump on stage. On the eve of Super Tuesday, with voters in key southern states like Georgia and Texas heading to the polls, Trump was careful to hone in on guns and religion.
The Second Amendment is under siege. And I'll tell you what else is under siege. Christianity. It's under siege. I've had tremendous support from pastors.
At one point, Trump appeared to refer to his controversial promise to ban Muslims from coming into the country. Trump claimed to have Muslim friends and then made a more specific reference about who he would ban.
We can't let the Syrians come in. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they come from.
Many in the crowd, like business student Austin White of Quitman, were impressed by Trump's business acumen.
I believe he's going to take the economy and turn it upside down, and to turn his whole country upside down.
Valdosta aluminum contractor Scott Troll thinks Trump is a problem solver who embodies the belief Republicans are better for business.
When Republicans are in, the wheels are turning, people spend making money and spending money and keeping the wheels spinning. Democrats get in, it slows down.
But Troll acknowledges business hasn't been so bad lately.
Great. It's good. But I think it could be better.
Jared Bailey, a Valdosta businessman, says Trump may have to explain some of the liberal positions he's taken in the past.
As long as he upholds the foundations and the conservative principles that have shaped the Republican Party for years and years, we will definitively be better off as a nation than we will be with 4 to 8 more years of Obama policies.
After Super Tuesday, it appears more Republicans are going to have to consider the possibility of a Trump nomination. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FBR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.